Welcome to Milwaukee Momcast, a podcast dedicated to real stories for real parents. Produced by Milwaukee Mom, we'll tackle a variety of topics in a way we hope will make you laugh, make you think, and remind you that this whole being a parent thing can be a little wild, but at least we're in it together. So, reheat your coffee, grab the headphones, and get comfy while we chat all things motherhood with a Midwest twist. Welcome. Today's guest on Milwaukee Momcast is going to talk to us about something that is a rather uncomfortable topic, but it's so important. Today, Melania Klemowitz joins us and talks to us about human trafficking. We're going to talk about some of the myths that you may have heard or even believed about trafficking. We're going to talk about what parents need to know when it comes to raising our kids out of love instead of out of fear, and even how intentional parenting can be preventative against the potential of trafficking. This is a tough topic, but we feel like it's so important. So let's jump into today's episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Milwaukee Momcast. And today we are going to talk about a topic that is extremely relevant for the Milwaukee community, but for the country at large. And we have a guest back in the studio today who's one of my, I think I said this the first time you were here, that you're one of my favorite humans. And I'll just say it again. Melania Klemowitz is joining us in studio today. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm fantastic, apart from good. The kind of cruddy weather that we're dealing with today.
I don't know what happened between the hours of 8 and 9 o'clock because the weather completely shifted.
Well, I saw a meme on Instagram recently that it was like the weather just went from 90 to 60 like it saw a state trooper.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Accurate.
And I was like, that sounds about right, except in our case, it's like 90 to 40.
Yeah.
Like it saw a state trooper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway,
okay.
Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
The last time that you and I chatted, we were basically talking about adult friendships. And today we have a bit of a shift in our topic because we are going to be talking about human trafficking. And I know that's kind of a jarring segue to be like, first we talked about being friends. Now let's talk about people being treated as slaves.
Yeah.
But it's an extremely important topic because this has become a massive issue in the Milwaukee community. But in general, we're seeing this trend growing nationwide and obviously internationally as well. But we're going to mainly focus in today on what is human trafficking. Number one, we're going to define it, kind of define what it's not as well, kind of dispel some of those myths. And then we're going to talk about how it actually relates to parents when it comes to parenting our children, because obviously that's where we focus here. So before we dig into that, now I know you've already introduced yourself on a previous episode, but for those who maybe have not listened to that or want to get to know you better, tell us a little bit about who you are, especially as how it relates to this realm of human trafficking.
Right, yeah. So I became interested in the anti-trafficking field just because of my own history with domestic violence. Wow, guys. It's early.
It's early. Monday. It's gonna be
fine. And also, I'm a mom and I have a daughter. And so in trafficking primarily affects women and girls. So I worked for almost 3 years as the executive coordinator at Exploit No More. And now I serve on the board of Rubies and I'm a workshop facilitator for that organization. So these workshops focus on awareness and prevention with topics like healthy relationships, what is sex trafficking, and mental health tools for girls between the ages of 12 and 17. So that's just a little bit about how I got into
that's like into the that Cliff field. Notes version. There's so much more, yeah. But a podcast yes. can only be so long.
Yep.
Okay, so let's jump right in. When it comes to defining trafficking, you wrote a post for the website a couple years ago, I think now.
Yeah, I think it was like 2 summers ago.
It was a while ago now, but the definitions still remain the same. Mm-hmm. So in that, you define human trafficking as the trade of humans for the purpose of forced labor, sexual exploitation, and or slavery. Even though slavery has been abolished, human trafficking still exists. Human trafficking is the modern day form of slavery. Researchers estimate that some 21 million people are enslaved worldwide. It is a thriving industry in America, estimated to bring in $150 billion, with a B, annually, with approximately $99 billion of that coming through sexual exploitation. And we're going to provide the link in the show notes as well as the sources for these numbers. And then if we zoom in even further, you mentioned that human trafficking in the Milwaukee area is of particular interest, obviously, to the organizations that you've worked with, but that 79% of human trafficking cases in Wisconsin occur in Milwaukee, and that 92% of Milwaukee's known cases involve girls under the age of 18. So obviously what we glean from that is that human trafficking is thriving.
Yep.
Nationally and internationally.
Yes, absolutely.
That it is a cash cow. Yeah. It is making an obscene amount of money.
It is.
And that here in Wisconsin and in the Milwaukee area in particular, we are seeing that the grand vast majority of the cases that are known are affecting girls under the age of 18, which means this is our kids. These are our kids, our daughters that are being affected by this. So when we are talking about those definitions, how can you elaborate on that? Because I think a lot of times when people think about human trafficking, there's a certain picture that kind of forms in our mind that maybe comes into conflict with this definition.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I always expand upon is what slavery looks like in this day and age. Because when people hear the word slavery or modern day slavery, that word slavery is a trigger for a lot of different reasons. And so slavery, modern day slavery and trafficking does not mean chains and cages and basements, right? It doesn't mean that you're locked away in a little basement and you don't ever see your family. So, and I'm specifically going to just talk about minors and what this looks like for minors. So trafficking, right? Being sold for sex, being sold for your body is known as modern day slavery, but that does not mean that these girls are hidden in a basement somewhere or they're on a chain gang or they're bound. Oftentimes, this means that these girls are instructed by their traffickers to run away from home on a Friday, and they get them back to mom and dad on Sunday. And they go to school during the week, and nobody knows because it is such a hidden crime. Trafficking worldwide is known as this hidden crime because you see it, people see it, but they can't define it.
It's literally hidden in plain sight.
It's hidden in plain sight, absolutely. So, These numbers as well are most likely grossly underestimated.
Because?
Again, because it's hidden in plain sight. So even in Milwaukee, when women or girls or boys, whoever these victims are, go to the police, right? Especially women and girls, they may go to the police and say, hey, there's a domestic violence situation, or the police are called in on a domestic violence situation. That's filed as domestic violence.
It's not filed as
trafficking. It's not filed as trafficking because trafficking is such a larger picture of what's going on.
Right.
And so these numbers, even in Milwaukee, a lot of times the DA or victim witness will say, hey, this person needs to be brought up on domestic violence charges or sexual abuse charges or physical abuse charges. And then as the DA is working the case, they realize, wait, no, actually, this is trafficking. And this has been going on for 3 years.
Wow.
To this same victim. But the victim came forward with a domestic violence situation one time.
Yeah.
And that's what we were looking at. And that opens up a big investigation.
Well, on top of that, I remember I went with you to the state capitol. Was that last year? I think it was.
Yeah.
And you sat in and you testified before this committee about trafficking. And one of the questions that was asked of you, I'll never forget this. They were so shocked at the numbers that you were putting out there and so taken aback by the prevalence of this. They literally asked you, but I don't understand. Like, how is it possible we're not seeing more convictions for this? How is it possible these cases are being thrown out of court? How is it that these people are getting away with and not being convicted for trafficking of minors? And your responses were so impactful. And we're gonna dig into that a little bit later on. But I think a couple of the things that you mentioned that really stood out that I want to make sure that we touch on were, number one, the language that's used. And we'll get to that in a moment. But the other thing that I want to talk about right away is how you mentioned that it's so much easier to convict on a drug charge. It's so much easier to convict on a domestic violence charge or theft or you know, embezzlement, you know, not embezzlement,
fraud,
fraud. Anything, yes, exactly. Yep. That, but it's so much harder to convict the trafficking charge that oftentimes the trafficking charge gets thrown out simply so they can get the conviction on something, which means there's no trafficking charge on this person's record.
Correct. Absolutely. And there's no justice for victim or the victim's family because trafficking is really hard to prove. So there's this element of forced fraud and coercion that takes place when trafficking takes place. And that's what needs to be proven in court. But as your victim has been going through this trafficking situation for 3 years, that becomes normalized.
Right.
So when they're like, hey, we need your testimony in order to convict on human trafficking charges. That victim is like, wait, what?
They have a hard time self-identifying as a victim.
They have a hard time self-identifying. They have a hard time wrapping their brain around it due to all their trauma.
Yeah.
Victims of trafficking have the same amount or more in their brain of PTSD than a soldier who has gone through active combat because of all of this stuff that's been happening to them. On top of that, they have a trafficker who is telling them that they are nothing, that nobody will ever help them, that nobody loves them, that nobody cares for them, and they're the only one who will take care of them. So if a DA or a police officer or an attorney comes in and says, hey, we're here to help you, they have had years and years and days and every moment drilled into them that that's not true for their life.
It's creating a cognitive dissonance.
It is.
That's not exactly just going to be like, oh, okay, sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's even with like, and this could be a whole other podcast, but when we talk about trauma and people are like, well, you know, she took back her statement or there's holes in her statement. Now she's filling them, but it's, you know, there's changes in her statement and different things like that. That's because trauma is affecting how she views or he views the world. And so.
And how the brain is processing
that information. That information. I know something with me. I've gone through trauma in my life. And there are times where even to this day, I'm like, why am I triggered right now? And it's a smell or it's something. And it fills in these holes in my brain of things that have happened that I did remember. But then something triggers it. And I'm like, wait, what?
Oh, yeah.
And so
absolutely,
it's the same thing that happens for trafficking victims. The problem is when you're trying to convict somebody, it looks like the victim is unreliable.
That they can't get their story straight, that they're just out for revenge or, you know, what have you.
Right. Or there's been an outside influence who's now told them what to say in order to get a conviction.
Totally. One of the other things that you mentioned when we were in that hearing is that there is, and this is outside of the justice system as well. This is just in the media and in conversation. You all had actually had this like viral post go from what that you posted on the organization that you previously worked for, their Facebook page, that talked about the language that we use in reference to not only trafficking as a whole, but also to victims. And one of the things that you mentioned in the hearing was that a lot of times they will be brought up on a prostitution charge.
Yeah, the victim will be.
Yes, yep. The victim will be you know, called a prostitute when we have, there's a massive problem with that inherently because I'm going to let you tell it because I'm getting all excited over here.
Right.
And I need to shut my mouth.
Absolutely. Okay, so you call a victim, okay, you call any victim a prostitute, and when you're in trial or when you're a social work agency or when you're the community or you're a workplace or someone and they see that there's been a prostitution charge, there's a stigma that is attached to that. Now, and I'm going to speak fully like more within the law, you put a prostitution charge on a victim and then ask the victim to tell you what happened.
It immediately discredits them.
100%.
Yeah.
On top of that, federal law says that minors, anybody under the age of 18, cannot be charged, or anybody under, so 17 and under, they cannot be charged as a prostitute because there's no such thing as a child prostitute because children cannot survive on their own. They can't survive on the street by themselves. They can't get an ID. They can't get rent. They can't get state benefits.
Wait, so that's from at the federal level?
At the federal level.
So if that's the case, how are prostitution charges being applied to minors in states?
Not all states have followed suit.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So federal charge. So like if there was a federal case no, that minor, that child cannot be charged as a prostitute.
If it's a federal case.
If it's a state case, not all states. Wisconsin does not have a safe harbor law. Wisconsin, that's why we were there in whenever that was to talk about the safe harbor law. Actually, we were there two different times, but that overlaps with it. Wisconsin hasn't followed suit yet with federal law. And so within the state law and municipalities and smaller counties and whatever, they don't have that law. And so children are often still charged with prostitution, or the police don't know how else to get a victim out of a situation. So they charge them as a prostitute in order to get them away from their trafficker.
So they can go in and arrest them, essentially.
They can go in and arrest them as an extraction technique. But what is that doing to the stigma around that victim? As well as if that goes to trial and the police are like, well, we initially, you know, charged them with prostitution, or we initially rescued them, you know, got them out of that situation.
Yeah.
On a prostitution charge, that jury is just going to hear prostitute. That jury is not going to hear victim.
Well, and also the term infers, or it kind of creates this image of intentionality and choice.
Yeah, you want this.
Yes,
you've
chosen
this
as a vocation.
So you can, yeah. You want to sell.
Versus a child isn't choosing any of that as a vocation. They are a child.
Yes, they are a child. Yeah.
One of that viral post that I was referring to that really dials into the language that is used in the media and around this. So we just talked about this idea of the child prostitute and how that's like a fallacy that can't be a thing. They literally cannot give consent. They cannot choose this as a vocation because they're children.
Yeah.
A couple of the other terms that this post that you guys put out challenged that I want to just have you address briefly before we move on are the term underage woman.
An underage woman is a child. But when you hear underage woman, you think woman. You don't.
Yeah.
Woman versus underage. You're still hearing woman. It's not your child. You are a child. If you're an underage woman, you are a child.
Which brings us to the first one of child prostitute. Like,
that's again,
not a thing.
It's not a thing.
Yep.
It's not a thing. And again, prostitute is that word that's sticking out, not child. Prostitute in this case is the noun, right? That everybody's going to cling to.
And oftentimes
and it's
just
you'll
not
see, the case.
You'll see in the media blast, the news report, that if we have somebody who actually gets arrested for this, we will see the phrase they had non-consensual sex with a minor.
Yeah, that's rape. That is rape.
Like, I don't mean to laugh because it's not funny.
No,
I'm making this sound because it's just this outburst.
It's so
ridiculousness. Yeah,
it's so ridiculousness. I got in an argument with somebody on this post about
I cannot believe it. You mean to tell me you got into an argument in the comments of Facebook?
And I kept it as professional as I could until I had to step back. But somebody commented and said it was about the non-consensual, right?
Uh-huh.
Non-consensual sex with a minor. This lovely human's opinion was that when a child is a child, right, mom and dad are the consenting adults for this child. Okay?
Okay.
Which, in retrospect, mom, dad, can I go on this field trip? Sure, son. Sure, daughter. Yes, you can. Okay, I get that. This person's argument was that the trafficker now takes the place of the parents, and the trafficker, get this, the trafficker gives consent for that victim on their behalf. So non-consensual sex with a minor is actually not the correct term because the trafficker has given consent on behalf of that minor to somebody who is buying them for sex.
So their argument was there's consent by proxy because the trafficker provided the consent?
Correct. Because the trafficker is now the parental unit in this minor's life.
That's some twisted nonsense.
Oh, it was rough. I mean, there were women, there were men just going in like, What?
I don't even want to know what that comment
chain
looked like.
It was rough. And I had to step back because I was so angry. But that is what some people's mindset are. And I'm not going to...
At some point, you're not going to convince them otherwise.
I can't convince somebody otherwise if that is their mindset. Yeah. And so I stepped back. I was like, yeah, I'm out. Like, I can't. Mm-hmm. I took off, like, notifications on my phone because I
that's a good idea.
It was bad. It was really rough.
Is a perfect... Well, that's a perfect connection to bring us to the myths of human trafficking.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of them.
Yes.
Because as we've literally just talked about, there's literally myths inherent in the language that's being used. Mm-hmm. There are... inaccurate assumptions being made in the charges that are being brought against both traffickers and victims, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we kind of want to just break down some of the biggest myths that you've encountered about human trafficking. Mm-hmm. The first one that you mentioned that you wanted to tackle is that sex trafficking is not kidnapping. They are not one and the same. They are very different. Can you expand on that just a smidge?
So I wanted to talk about this one because... this is a continual conversation, question and answer, commenting that I have with parents anywhere I go.
Yeah.
Anywhere I speak. I know a lot of other people in the anti-trafficking field address this a lot because parents have this fear of my child is not going to come home because they've been kidnapped. My child is going to be kidnapped off the bus or off the street or whatever that looks like. But here's the thing. If you kidnap somebody, it is very hard, especially a child, it is very hard to control them because that child's going to be confused and scared and you've kidnapped mm-hmm. them and they're going to freak out and they're going to be belligerent and they're going to attack you and try to escape. But as traffickers, traffickers are very smart. Traffickers can be male or female. They can be one person. They can be like co-leaders, traffickers, whatever.
They can have like a whole team.
They can have a team of people. Yeah. But traffickers are very smart. And their goal is to control the victim to get as much money out of them. So if they kidnap a victim, they're not going to get the largest amount of profit out of them, so to speak.
Yeah. It's all about maximizing the investment.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It's very simple business supply and demand chain. They are the business person. Their business is based on supply and demand. So if they kidnap them, they're going to have very little control over that person.
Mm.
If they spend a few months getting to know them, getting to know this victim, pretending to be their boyfriend, or if it's a female, pretending to be her friend, building a relationship with them to
learning
get to
about
know
their dreams and their aspirations and
yes.
their fears and their
yes.
past and their damage.
Family, right. Getting to know, like, yeah. tell me about your parents and all of these things. That's called the grooming process. So if they spend this time grooming this child or grooming this adult, because adults can be groomed too, absolutely, that is then when the trafficking or the abuse will start. So we hear over and over and over again, in retrospect, this was the grooming process. And then some abuse started to happen. And then they asked me to sleep with their friend for rent. And then they asked me to sleep with their other friend for money for food. And then that turned into now I'm at the strip club because we need money. And that turned into trafficking. It is oftentimes a very manipulative, isolating, and I'm going to say slow here because kidnapping is oftentimes
fast, quick.
Kidnapped.
Yes.
The slow process of grooming is for control. It's to build, unfortunately, it's to build love and trust in an unhealthy way that appears healthy.
Yeah.
Because it's like the... what is it? It's like in Red Riding Hood when the wolf wears the granny mask.
Mm.
It's the same thing. It's very similar to that process.
Well, and like, you know, we've heard that kind of metaphor about the how to boil a frog. Have you ever
yes.
heard that?
Oh, my gosh.
You can't just throw the frog into the boiling water. You put it in there when it's cool and gradually heat it up.
Turn it up.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing. That's a great way to look at it.
I was listening to another podcast that I really, really like called the Papaya Podcast. And she had a guest
she's
on there.
Amazing.
Yeah. Who is a survivor of trafficking. And she just talked about how she was a waitress and really didn't have any friends and was struggling to kind of, you know, pay her bills and find her way. And this like friend at the restaurant, this other waitress, really kind of took her under her wing. And she was older. I think she was like 6 years older. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she just was so cool. And she wanted to be like her. And oh, my gosh, mm-hmm. it's so cool that she's wanting to hang out with me. And they would talk and all these things. And it took months. And eventually this older friend invited her to like, hey, you're going to come party with me this weekend. And she was like, oh, my gosh, she wants to hang out with me. And then before you know it, she goes and there's all of this, like this huge thing where, I mean, we're talking drugs, alcohol, all of it. And she wakes up the next day and this girl's like, all right, now you got to pay up. You owe me $600 for all of this stuff that you ate, drank, did, whatever. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Now you have to work it off. Yeah. And that was it. Now she was at the strip club having to work it off. And before you know it, she had, so basically this gal was like the recruiter for her trafficker.
Yeah, absolutely. And there can be, There's a woman who we know, her trafficker was a female. Her trafficker was a female. And this female trafficker did the exact same thing. I'm going to be your friend. Well, because you don't have money or whatever.
And that's one of the myths that we want to bust as well. So we're going to just kind of go down a list here and talk about some of the assumptions that are made and some of the things maybe that people don't necessarily know. But there can be this myth, this misunderstanding that a trafficker looks like, you know, some mafia guy that we see in these old movies, right? That's right. The image of a trafficker. But in actuality, they can be women. Can be
white males from New Berlin. quite frankly, like there was a case, I think when I first started as the executive coordinator at E&M, this guy was... He was in New Berlin and he was trafficking the neighbor kids between, it was like, I think it was like Get one or out. Two girls, or maybe just one girl. He was trafficking her between the time that the girl got home from school and her parents got home from work.
That's a really short window of time.
It's like 2 hours. And that is, so here's the other thing. That's when we see trafficking spikes. The police will track like trafficking spikes like nationwide and whatever. The times when men, because men are your buyers, men are the ones who are buying sex.
Most of the time.
I can't say all the time.
There'll always be exceptions to the rule, but in general for this conversation, we should probably just preface. We're going to talk to more the rule than the exception.
Yes. So it's hours that they are unaccounted for. So before work, hey, honey, I'm going to head to the gym and then head to work. Unaccounted for hours. Lunch breaks. Hey, I'm going to go out and having lunch at the office today. I'm doing this unaccounted hours. Hey, honey, I'm going to the gym after work today. So I'm going to be home closer to 6, not 5 or whatever.
Or I'm working late.
Those are unaccounted for hours. And that's oftentimes when traffickers have to meet the demand. Traffickers have to meet the needs of the demand. And that is during those unaccounted for hours. So after school... I hate to say this, but after school is a great time to traffic kids. Wow. Because mom and dad are still at work. Oftentimes, if you're 13, 14 years old, you're not going to have a babysitter at home anymore. So those are unaccounted for hours. Now, I'm not saying get your 14-year-old a babysitter because that's a whole other level. And we're going to talk more about like parenting and stuff in a bit. But those are unaccounted for hours that a trafficker is taking advantage of.
But knowing that is... kind of one of the prime times is helpful, at least for parents to know.
Absolutely.
One of the other myths that's brought up is that it's only girls that are trafficked.
Absolutely not. Boys are trafficked too. People who identify as LGBTQ, adults, adult males, adult females, boys, girls, anybody can be trafficked. Anybody can be a victim. Because again, a trafficker is going to meet the demand, and the demand may be for boys.
Yeah.
The demand may be for, you know, an adult female, whatever it is, a trafficker is going to meet that demand.
Another one that we want to address is, you know, you kind of mentioned it when it came to that kidnapping situation, but like, there's a rather large unlikelihood that your kid's going to be snatched from your side in Target when you're like, you know, just rolling through the toy aisle.
Right.
But where you should probably be more vigilant and concerned is in their digital spaces, such as YouTube, role-playing games, things like that.
Even Facebook, Instagram, up in your DMs. I mean, Twitter, any social media, gaming platform that allows for conversation, specifically private conversation. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the gaming, all of that, that there's an opportunity for private conversation there.
And of course, then there's always the new ones that are popping up every, you know, 5 minutes left and right that we struggle to keep track of.
Oh so my gosh, I don't even know.
TikTok and Snapchat and all these other ones. That's a conversation for another day. But like my son, my 12-year-old was literally like telling me about TikTok and I was like, yeah, but, and I was trying to ask the questions without him knowing that I was like asking the questions, you know, and going, so who can message kids on TikTok?
Right.
And he's just like, oh, it's totally safe. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, okay, no wonder you kids are like, yeah, because you're just little adorable little space monkeys who think that the world is unicorn and roses and you're never, and nothing's out there.
And you're a child. A child is not going to think, I think this person might be grooming me to sell me for my body. Like, they're not going to think that because they're a child.
They're going to think, oh my gosh, they're being so nice to me.
Yes.
Okay, next myth. Human trafficking only happens in big cities.
False. Human trafficking happens everywhere. Everywhere. It may look different in rural Wisconsin than it does in Milwaukee. But human trafficking happens anywhere. Massage parlors, hotels, gas stations, truck stops, residential homes, on the street. I mean, it can happen anywhere and look like, quite frankly, anything, which I hate saying. Like, I wish there was a cookie cutter answer that I could say, follow this pattern.
Yeah.
But there isn't a pattern to it. And that's what makes it so hidden in plain sight. And that's what makes it the one of the fastest growing criminal industries worldwide, because it can happen in so many different places and look like so many different things.
I promise we're going to end this podcast on a hopeful note. Like, right now we're just like tearing everybody down. Where they're just like,
we will.
No judgment if you have to push pause and come back to this at a later time.
Take a break.
Self-care. Take a minute. Yeah. Take a minute if you need to take a minute. Okay. A couple other things that I want to address. So you mentioned that they're being trafficked in plain sight. So another myth can be like, you know, oh, this is done in back alleys. This is done behind closed doors. Not so much. Because one of the things that I want you to expand upon is how you mentioned lunchtime. I remember you telling me the story about a group of youth that you were working with where you discovered that the lunch hour thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Remember?
You tell it.
There was a group. I cannot. Like, a lot of these stories that I have all slowly blend together. But there was a school. I cannot remember where the school was.
It's okay. We'll just say a local school.
This girl, her friends were, again, in retrospect, her friends were like, we should have known something was going on. This girl was displaying just different signs, and we'll talk about red flags too, but she was trafficked in her school parking lot on her lunch break. So that buyer, that demand for her body, she didn't leave the school. Again, traffickers want to stay under the radar. If she
never
left,
even left the school premises.
She never even left the school premises. It happened in a car in the parking lot on her lunch break. And then she went back to school.
Unbelievable.
For like biology or whatever it was.
Wow.
So again, and her school had no idea.
Yeah.
But again, why would they?
Right.
Because that trafficker spent so much time making sure he maintained control over her in her perspective and her outlook on the world and her environment.
One of the this isn't a myth, but this is a just thing that I want to make sure that we point out before we move on. So there is a post that we'll link in the show notes as well from our sister site at Military Moms Blog. And they wrote a piece as well about the seven reasons that your child may have already been targeted and seven things you didn't really know about human trafficking. We've kind of been talking about a lot of them, But one that they list that I think is really important to point out is that children coming out of the foster care system, immigrants, refugees, and you even mentioned, you know, kiddos who identify in the LGBTQ plus community mm-hmm. are at greater risk for becoming victims. And there's, you know, a myriad of reasons for this, but I think in general, it probably just comes down to them, to the kids from these populations feeling the most vulnerable. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. They are the most vulnerable. I think the other thing is they are coming from an environment where love may not be expressed.
Yeah.
Foster care, immigrants, refugees, right? You may know mom and dad love you, but there is so much trauma happening around you that you might not have heard that. If you're in foster care, you're in the foster system, the likelihood that your foster parent is going to say, I love you, if you're bouncing around, if you've been in 8 different homes, that foster parent, because love is a very big word. Yeah. Same with kids who identify, I'm going to say this, kids who identify in a way that isn't suitable for their parents.
I'm picking up what you're laying down.
They may not feel loved, however they may identify.
Right.
They may not feel loved, or their parents may refuse to love them.
It could be anything from a, you know, sexual orientation to a gender binary situation. It could be any number of things.
Right. To even just that exploration phase of, what am I wearing today?
Mm-hmm.
Or I want to try makeup, or I don't want to try makeup, or whatever.
Well, and then you talk about, you know, like there's this, there's also this kind of underlying sense of instability in the majority of those populations that we mentioned, you know, because obviously somebody is in the foster care system because they're of some sort of breakdown of their family of origin, of some of some variety, whether it took place when they were a baby, whether it took place whenever. There was some sort of breakdown of their family of origin that has them in the foster care system to any number of extents. Obviously, refugee populations, massive instability. Immigration, massive instability. All of these things kind of have where you don't feel this sense of strong foundation. You're going to seek it out somehow, right?
And that trafficker is going to pick up on that, and they are going to meet that need of yours of needing a foundation, of wanting a home, whether that's a physical home, whether that's an emotional home. They are going to offer that. They are going to make sure they meet that need because that's the biggest vulnerability.
Yeah.
So they meet the biggest vulnerability, and then they exploit that same vulnerability.
Which brings us to intentional parenting.
Yes.
So one of the other pieces that you wrote was literally talking about how, okay, this is where we promise it's going to get more hopeful. So we spent this entire time talking about, here's the problem. Here's how pervasive the problem is. Here's how there is no cookie cutter victim. There is no cookie cutter trafficker. Literally could be anybody. Every single parent listening right now is
freaked out.
Yes, everyone's panicking. How do I protect my kid? What do I need to do? And so what we want to try to do is bring it back around to, okay, let's encourage one another and say, here are some of the things that we can do to prevent this scenario from arising in our families. Can we 100% guarantee that? Of course not. We can't 100% guarantee anything. But a piece that you wrote really addressed how intentional parenting can help prevent trafficking. So we're just going to work down the list, and I'm going to just have you expand on each of these points. And this is, again, this will be linked in the show notes so you can review the entire piece in its entirety. So here we go. Most traffickers use the human need to be loved and accepted as a weapon to control and manipulate their victims. A family environment rich in acceptance, communication, support, and love is going to establish a strong foundation. We kind of just touched on that a minute ago as well.
Absolutely. I think something that I want to do, and Sarah and I, we talk about this all the time, is like, how can we implement this in action? Mm-hmm. Because just saying it, cool. Like, let's just say it. But like something we do in our family, because we did just kind of touch on this previously, something that we do in our family to build communication and support, as well as then the kind of the fallout of communication and support building, is love, is anybody at any time in our family can call a family meeting. This means that wherever we're at, family meeting is called, the entire family, including the dog, because she goes everywhere we all are. Drop what we're doing.
This dog needs to act right,
too. Right, yep. Yep. And we all sit together and we talk about whatever this person has called the family meeting for. So this may be something as little as child A and child B got an argument on the bus and now they've called a family meeting because they're still arguing.
Okay.
Or child A is still feeling annoyed or whatever.
Or hurt.
Or hurt or unheard or whatever. Could be as little as that. It could be as big as, hey, there's a bully at school and I'm not okay.
Yeah.
And the point of calling a family meeting at any time, family meeting is that that is our priority at that time.
Yeah.
Because when it comes at the end of the day, whether it's in business or family or friends, it is all about loving each other well. Mm-hmm. And one of the actionable ways we can do that is physically showing up for our people when they call a family meeting. And that's something we do because, again, that's building communication and support, which then in kind of like fallout of that is that's actionably showing love, which is really important.
You also have some specific things that you address for younger kids versus tweens and teens. So we're going to start with younger kids as well. You say for younger children, building bonds, reading and singing to them, talking about feelings and processing them together, limiting screen time and access to social media. And it seems kind of odd to have that in the younger children one at first, but that's because I'm old. But it's not that ridiculous.
It isn't. It's not. So I think one of the cutest things in the entire world is when a two-year-old steals your phone and takes a ton of pictures of themselves
and
using
then you
Snapchat.
Look at your camera roll. And
right. Or like, using the Snapchat filters.
All these like up the nose photos.
Right. And they're hilarious and adorable. But also, guess what? Your two-year-old knows how to access your phone and get into Snapchat.
Yeah.
So if your two-year-old knows how to do that when they're five, they're probably going to know a lot more about Snapchat because they knew the basics at two.
Yeah.
And so.
And they pick up on it so fast.
And they do. Yeah. They really do. The other thing is limiting screen time and access to social media. That goes back to communication.
Right.
If you are in front of your screen all day working and then you get home and you're in front of your screen, your child is going to pick up on that. Now, okay, listen, y'all, I am preaching to myself here.
Same.
Because I legitimately have a timer on my phone. So at 3:50 or whatever, right before my kiddo gets home, I have a timer that goes off and it puts my phone on do not disturb.
Are you serious? That's brilliant.
It is. My phone goes on do not disturb and I'm like, I'm done. Like I'm out. Yeah. I'm on do not disturb. And then it goes back on. She goes to bed at like 7:30-ish. My phone will go back on to like regular because I normally work after she goes to sleep or whatever. It'll go back to like regular phone-ness at 8.
So you're not getting the notifications, which isn't tempting you as much to grab your phone if maybe.
Exactly. And I've turned off so many notifications just in general as well.
That's really smart.
But by putting it on do not disturb, I'm training my brain to be like, actually don't need this right now. I don't need to be on my phone.
Yeah.
I don't need to be attached.
Which is setting a good example for them too.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, that's building communication because research shows, study shows, communication always comes back to face-to-face.
Yeah.
That is where we're learning. So that's why putting in those building bonds by reading and singing to your kid, talking about feelings instead of texting about their day. Right?
Or even like, you know, when we're looking at the younger kids.
Oh, right, right,
rather
right.
than like saying, you know, oh, stop crying about that. This is not a big deal. Validating the, yes. I understand you're upset.
Yes.
Can we, let's talk about how this makes you feel and how we could have done this differently.
Yes. Another.
But with, go ahead.
I was going to say another another huge thing with that, with little kids, teaching them, is this a big problem or a little problem?
Ooh, I like that.
Because it might be a little problem to you, but if they're like, this is a big problem to me, you know, okay, we need to address this. Or if they're like throwing a tantrum over the color of bubbles in their bath because that's happened.
Or the leggings they were wearing
to
school.
Or the leggings they were wearing to school. Oh my gosh. And I can sit there and say, is this a big problem or a little problem? And even though she's throwing a tantrum, she's screaming at me, this is a little problem. I know, cool. Like I can then say, you need to stop crying then.
Yeah.
But if she's like, if this is a big problem, I'm not going to shut her down because there's something to be
worked
through.
Why are you crying then? Like, where's this coming from?
Right.
So then when we transition then into tweens and teens, We got to sell, we have to work on setting healthy boundaries and limits, talking mm-hmm. about internet safety and digital responsibility, which we've touched on a little bit, which, but that in and of itself could be an entire podcast.
Right.
But we want to zero in on the red flags. So rapid fire, send me down some of these red flags that as parents, if we're starting to see these things happening in our kids, that they would throw up a red flag like, something's going on. We need to take a look at what's happening here.
Right. Absolutely. So I think the biggest red flag is a 180 of your child's behavior. So a lot of red flags that I used to say, like when I first started doing anti-trafficking work, I'd be like, if your kid becomes isolated and depressed and starts to show signs of anxiety, that's a huge red flag. But the reality is, if your child starts to act very differently than what their norm is, that's a red flag. For example, I have a really outgoing child and she's always going out with her friends, and now she starts to revert back into herself and she has a different friend group that I've never met. That's okay. A big deal.
Yep.
Or my child is really, really quiet and never goes out, and now all of a sudden she's starting to go out with this new friend group that isn't at her school or I've never met, or they're older kids. Like my kid is 14 and now she's hanging out with these seniors. There's that there's a shift. There's a dynamic.
Big change. Yeah.
Right. That's a huge red flag. The other thing is if she has an older boyfriend. So I'm going to say she here because girls are that targeted victim. She has an older boyfriend. So she's 14 and she's dating a 19-year-old. Listen, I'm going to say this. You as that child's parent, now I am not ever wishing this on anybody, but if you have a 12, 13, 14-year-old girl, and there is an 18-year-old, even a 17-year-old, an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old who's interested in them, shut it down, because it's not healthy. It does not mean that this kid's going to traffic them or they're a recruiter. I'm just saying in general, that is not healthy.
Best practice here is probably that's a hard no.
Right. It is just not a healthy thing.
Some of the other things that you've run
down.
It's
not healthy. Cell phones, right? Your kid doesn't have a cell phone and all of a sudden you see that they have a cell phone in their room. A trafficker or a recruiter may have bought that for them for communication purposes.
Other things that they may have bought them as well may include.
Right. Necklaces, jewelry, right?
Bags, shoes,
whatever.
Makeup.
Right. Whatever that kid wants. If you don't let them wear makeup and now all of a sudden they have a ton of makeup.
Yeah.
That's eyelashes. A red flag. Eyelashes. First of all, putting on eyelashes is so hard. Just stick to mascara. But whatever. It's so difficult. Just these subtle changes. Making sure you're communicating with their teachers. Maybe you put them on the bus in the morning and they don't actually show up to school. That's a huge deal.
Totally.
Or their grades are dropping, or teacher is saying they're falling asleep in class a lot. They're there, but they're falling asleep all the time. Just these, making sure, again, don't ever take one red flag and say, oh my gosh, my child is no longer talking to me. Okay, they also might just be hormonal and be a teenager. But as you're putting together red flags over a week or a month or whatever that looks like, as they start to stack on each other,
right,
that's something to be aware of. That is something to
say. We're not saying taking one red flag like, oh my gosh, my 13-year-old is suddenly interested in wearing makeup, because that's developmentally normal.
Yep.
And turning that into they're clearly being trafficked.
Yes.
Which brings us to kind of where we want to wrap up in that. Where do we go from here? Like, how do we take away from this where we can be intentional parents, knowing that this is a massive problem, knowing that this danger exists, but how do we intentionally parent out of love rather than fear? Because we have all heard the stories of, the people who put the gas in their car, went in to buy a bag of chips and came out and the police were at their car door because they had left their child in the car when they ran in to pay and get their chips. Or, you know, in my case, you and I have talked about this, about how I have this fear of sending my kids to play at the park down the street because I'm afraid that if I leave them there unaccompanied, even if they are, in my view, old enough, that I'm going to be deemed as negligent.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this fear, but like, more than anything else, we are so super connected to not only one another, but to you know, a 24-hour news cycle, to everything, that it can feel like the world is closing in on us in a very scary way. And then now you add in the, I have to protect my child from being trafficked into it. What do we do with that? Like, yeah. How do we send our kids out the door in the morning,
right,
and not like just be paralyzed with fear,
yeah,
over their well-being?
I think, oh my gosh, the biggest thing here is parenting out of a place of love and not fear. Parenting out of a place of confidence in that love. Parenting out of a place of, hey, I have these rules in place to keep you safe, to keep you social, to keep you, what's the third S?
Smart.
Smart. We do this all the time. This is why we're best friends and we co-parent, whatever.
It's fine. It's totally normal.
Right. But something we always tell our kids is,
safe, social, and smart.
I have these rules in place to keep you safe, to keep you social, and to keep you smart. No, little, my adorable 7-year-old daughter, you may not have a cell phone because you are not smart enough to understand social media.
You're very smart, but you're just not developmentally smart. Yes. Your brain and ready.
Socially, go walk to your friend's house and see if they want to hang out. That's fine. We'll walk together.
Well, because they need to be building independence.
Exactly. So,
but you'll notice that one of those things is not to keep you happy.
No, it's not. I'm not gonna give you a phone just so you can be like your friend.
Yes.
I'm gonna give you a phone when I know that you are ready for it.
Yeah. It can be hard. Like you know, boundaries are such a big deal that you and I talk about all the time. But that, you know, when we come to this concept of parenting out of love rather than fear, healthy boundaries is such an important component of that, because that is almost like building a fence with a door in it for your kid. That, mm-hmm. like, I've built this fence. Like, this is the boundary. You may not cross this unless you go through this particular mm-hmm. door. And you have to know the combination. You have to prove that you know how to operate mm-hmm. it. You know, like, there's all of these things. You can't just, like, wander back and forth. Like, it's not right. Anything, because then that is going to not only, you know, cripple them from understanding how to navigate that space, but that's going to increase your fear on top right. of it as well.
Right. You're giving them tools to stay safe, social, and smart because you love them.
Yeah.
Not because you're terrified, because kids can tell the difference, mm-hmm. right?
Totally.
I struggle with anxiety and panic. When I am struggling with anxiety, my daughter can say, Mommy, are you okay? Are you sure you're okay right now? And I can say yes, and she knows I actually mean no.
So empathy is a big one.
It is. So just showing up for your kids in love and giving them grace in the mistakes. And again, building this foundation of, we love you. And because we love you, you need to trust us that we are setting you up for success with tools for protecting yourself and advocating for your friends. Versus, we love you so much that we are going to cut you off from the entire world because we're terrified.
I mean, look how that worked out for Elsa in Frozen.
No, she can't handle it.
Right.
She was like,
let's talk about some parenting out of fear rather than love. Oh my gosh, she has these powers so that we can't figure out how to handle it. Let's just lock her in her room. I'm sure this is going to go well.
It doesn't ever go well.
It didn't work out. Did it, people? Like, we all have seen the movie about 10 million times. Poor Elsa had some issues.
Yes.
Like, they need some therapy up there.
She went through some trauma.
And what's
it called?
Arendelle?
I was going to say like Avonlea, but I think that's...
Oh, people are like screaming at their speakers right
now. Is Avonlea Anne of Green Gables though?
No.
What's Avonlea?
I don't remember. Oh my gosh. We're very much like, now people are going to be like, well, these are not credible folks right now.
Gosh, we're credible.
But okay. So not locking them in their room because right. they can't handle their ice powers. Bad
right.
idea.
Don't be like Elsa.
We can't be like Elsa's parents because that did not work out. But the other thing, so like when you were talking about empathy, like literally saying something as simple as, you know, I noticed when you got home today and I saw these behaviors or this body language, A, B, mm-hmm. and C. Can you tell me more about that?
Yes,
not
tell
assuming
me.
Like what they must be feeling based on right. that, literally letting them, giving them the opportunity to say, I see that there's something happening here, giving them the opportunity to fill in the blanks and explain right. those feelings to you rather than you putting them on them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling this to myself because
yes.
I have one in particular where that is always
yes.
my tendency, is I want to just be like, why are you so angry?
Right. using the phrases well, instead of
maybe
saying
he wasn't angry. Maybe I just told him he was angry. Right. And now he's angry. But maybe before he was just disappointed in the way something went and it manifested as him looking angry. But instead, I put that on him.
Right. You know, saying things like, tell me everything about your day, or tell me everything about your feeling, or what happened to you. Now, what's wrong with you? Like, my daughter will freak out. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? What is going on? And she's like, oh my gosh, you hate me. Yeah.
Something's wrong with me? Am I broken?
Versus, hey, what happened? What happened today to make you freak out about leggings? Right? Leggings. Because they're just leggings.
Coming back to the leggings.
Right.
At the end of the day, what it comes back around to from the beginning of this conversation to the end is that, yes, we know that there are these dangers around us in the world that we're bringing our, that we've brought our children into, and that can be really scary, but at the end of the day, we have to send them out the door, because they're gonna have to be adults at some point,
yes,
who can speak for themselves, advocate for themselves, and advocate for others as well. And it's our job to be able to coach them in how to express those feelings and be people who bring more love into the world rather than more fear.
Absolutely. I had a woman ask me, like, how can you do this job and want kids? Or how can you do this job and want more babies? And it comes, oh my gosh, the theme today, it comes back to love. Because I love my kids so much, I'm going to give them the tools to be successful world changers. I'm not going to not have kids or not raise my kid and just like have her be stunted at the age of 7 because I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And every day I'm just going to choose to be courageous and love my kid. And that's,
we're going to screw up.
And we're going to screw up.
And we're going to admit when we screw up.
And we're going to give grace to ourselves and to our kids. And we're just going to keep going, because the world deserves really good kids that we have. I'm raising a fantastic child, personally. We
have like, I can't speak for you, Sarah.
We have a perfect life. But like at the end of the day, the world deserves to get to know my really amazing kid, and I'm going to set her up for success because I love her. And that's it at the end of the day. That's all we can ask for.
Today's My Milwaukee Mom moment is one of mine, because I have 3 sons who do crazy things. All right, so we had some friends and their kids. We were all together over at my friend's house. So the adults were all hanging out downstairs and the kids were all upstairs playing goodness only knows what. And my middle son came down the stairs and he was like not crying, but was like whimpering that something was clearly wrong. And he had this pained look on his face and like the tears were starting to come out of his eyes a little bit. And so we were all sitting around the kitchen island and he came down the stairs and he walks over to me. I'm like, buddy, what's wrong? And he's rubbing his elbow and he's like, I think I hurt it. And we're like, why? What happened? And he's like, it's all tingly. And in my head, I'm going, oh, he hit his funny bone. Mm-hmm. But before I was able to say anything, he goes, I just have a very sensitive elbow. And all of the adults immediately burst out laughing.
Oh, yeah.
At which point this poor kid bursts into tears because he's thinking that his sensitive elbow is acting up and all of the adults are laughing their heads off at him.
Right.
I mean, he got very, very mad.
It's like, don't we all though?
And he's like, he turned on his heel and he storms off and he goes, I can't believe you're laughing at my sensitive elbow. And we've now every single time my friends see him, they're like, how is his elbow?
Is his elbow good?
Is his elbow fine?
It's so funny. Before you said it was your middle son, I was going to guess. So this sounds like a middle son story. If I know your boys it at is. All. Yes.
It is. And he was so mad at our reaction. So
of course.
That's today's My Milwaukee Mom moment.
Aww.
Okay, Melania, as we wrap things up for today, I know that you and I have gone through this before, but you're going to hit me with some new ones today.
I am, yes. All right. I think about them.
Tell me an unpopular opinion.
Pumpkin spice chai reigns supreme over a pumpkin spice latte.
Listen, I am maybe going to make some enemies. It's fine. But I don't like pumpkin spice lattes either.
I don't like them at all.
I think they have like this nasty aftertaste to them. They're like thick and...
Yes.
And like just weird, but this year Starbucks busted out that pumpkin cream cold brew. I know you don't like coffee.
I don't like coffee.
It's fine. That thing was delicious. Mm-hmm. But I do like a pumpkin spice chai.
Pumpkin spice chai. So just ask for a pump of, because people are like, oh my gosh, how do I do a pumpkin spice chai? If you say, hey, can I have a pumpkin spice chai? Everybody is going to just put pumpkin spice latte because that's what they're programmed to do.
No.
Just say, wrong. I would like a chai with a pump of pumpkin spice. It will change your life.
There you go.
So good.
Got it. Okay. What's your My Milwaukee pick today?
My pick is Majen, which is in the third ward. It's just this beautiful little space of books and trinkets and in plants. And I just love it. It like makes me very happy to just walk in there. It's kind of like...
And you have a succulent addiction.
I do.
So,
if you love me, you will get me a succulent, not a bouquet of flowers. I love them. And so it's just the sweetest little happy place in Milwaukee.
It's just like such a variety, cool variety of things in there.
It is. And yeah, it's always changing.
You can find gifts for basically anybody.
Yes. And when things go on clearance, I mean, they have good prices either way for like the stuff they have in there. But I always just start at the back where the clearance is and then work my way up.
It's and then fabulous. You always leave with a succulent.
I do every time.
What's in your cart today? This can, again, be something that is hanging out in your cart that you haven't pulled the trigger on yet, or something that you've purchased recently that you're like, this is amazing and people need to know about it.
Yes. So this actually goes back to chai.
Shocking.
Oh, gosh. Right.
We're going to get comments. Like, what is it with this woman and her obsession with chai tea?
If you follow me on Instagram, I like routinely post like, this is the kind of chai I'm having today. So chai from Ethical Trade Company, Ethical Trade Co. They are located in Madison. They are definitely on brand with talking about trafficking today. They are an ethically based company, and they have chai from Level Ground Trading. And it's just delicious. It's really well priced. It's always my go-to chai. They get it. You can get it in loose leaf or already in like little pyramid tea bags. And they're so good. I highly recommend Ethical Trade Company to anybody. And they ship it to you like immediately. Like if I ordered it today, I would have it like today or tomorrow or whatever the next day is. Like it is.
That's like Amazon Prime level.
It is. It's fabulous.
That's impressive.
I love it. Yep.
So what's coming up for you soon, and like where can people learn more about if they want to learn more about human trafficking, they want to get involved, they need some more education? So that's a twofold question.
Yeah.
Like, what do you have coming up, and where can people connect more when it comes to fighting human trafficking?
Yeah. So I recently got to work on a really amazing project called End It Wisconsin. It's a campaign that I designed for anybody who wants to just raise awareness about trafficking. So when that's available, anti-trafficking organizations can use it. Churches can use it. Businesses can use it. Individuals can use it. Small groups. And you can take it and just take the graphics that are already made for social media, take the caption, and you can just raise awareness on your own or get a group to do it around an event, whatever that may look like. But that's a really, I designed it so that anybody could access it and give their networks accurate information about trafficking,
mm-hmm,
versus, hey, I read this news article,
yeah,
and all the language is messed up or whatever
Like. Versus perpetuating the myths.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's completely free and anybody will be able to access it. So that's going to be coming out
soon.
Soon. Ish. It'll be soon. It's the goal. It'll be like live for all of 2020.
Oh, cool.
So that's cool. That's the goal for it. Yep.
Awesome.
And then, your other part. So where can you find more information about trafficking?
Yeah.
You can check out, just for like general information about trafficking, my two main go-tos is Polaris Project and then the National Human Trafficking Hotline number, which is actually run by Polaris Project.
Okay.
They have really good data, very good information. I highly recommend looking at them. And then for local places to chat with, I would recommend going to UMOS if you want to learn more about labor trafficking, immigration, refugee type trafficking.
Okay.
I would recommend going to Ruby's, which is where I work with them. And that's really good 12-week programming for girls between the ages of 12 and 17 that you could get your student involved in.
Okay.
And then the other place is Exploit No More. That is where I used to work. They're a great organization. If you follow them on Facebook, they put a lot of information out on Facebook as well as on their website. They have a whole like networking kind of like jumble pot of of educational links. So
fantastic.
Those are the three main areas that I would check out.
Thank you so much, because I know this is not exactly an easy topic to chat about, but it's actually surprisingly easy to talk about it with you because A, you're so knowledgeable about it, and B, you make it feel like we can end the conversation with hope.
We can.
And
we can
know that as parents, we don't have to parent our children out of fear, and that it is important to know about these things and to be aware of them and to understand them. But at the end of the day, we are going to give it everything that we can to raise good kids in a safe world as best we can, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what we can That's all we can ask
That's all we can do. It's all we can try, you guys. We can do this. We can do this. All right. Thanks, Melania. You have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye. Oh, sorry. That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. For more information on what you just heard, check out the show notes and find us on Instagram at Milwaukee Momcast. If you enjoyed this episode and know someone who should tune in, please share it. Grab a screenshot and share it to your Instagram stories and tag us so we can say thanks. Even better, take a moment and leave a review on iTunes, which helps us more than you realize. We'll look forward to you joining us on our next episode of Milwaukee Momcast.